Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tet Zayin Amud Aleph, four lines down. V'tarvayu alibid Rabbi Yehuda. Here we have the machloki between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to what is the reason one doesn't get malkot with regards to the Yeshua Shochel Kikar Zeh Hayom v'avar Yom v'alachla. They both say you don't get malkot. Rabbi Yochanan says you don't get malkot because it's a lav shein b'maseh. Reish Lakish says that you don't get malkot because it is hatrat safek. So that's what we discussed yesterday, this machloket between them about hatrat safek. In addition to that, we also have a machloket about lav shein bo maseh. The Gemara says that they both learn it according to Rabbi Yehuda, and that's the source for their position, the Tanya. Lo totiru imenu ad boker, notar imenu ad boker, ba'esh tisrof. So you have a requirement not to leave over a corporate note past a certain time. If you do leave it beyond that time, it becomes notar, then you have to burn it. So it's a classic lav shenitak be'aseh, bal katub li'tenaseh achar lo taseh. That's what's described here by Rabbi Yehuda, that here you have the Torah giving you a positive commandment after the negative commandment. Lomar, shein lokin alav, tivir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda tells you that's why you don't get malkot over here, because it's a lav, hanitak be'aseh. Rabbi Yochanan daig, hachi taima, the bal katub. The reason over here that you are patur is because it's a lav hanitak be'aseh. Halo bal katub. Had it not been a lav hanitak be'aseh, loket, you would have gotten malkot. Alma, hatrat safek, shma hatra, that a hatra al safek is called hatra, because there's always a safek. If you tell the person, eat it now, because if you don't, it's going to become notar, you never know when he's going to eat it. He still has more time in the day. It's always a hatra safek. Given that it's a hatra safek, you would have thought you should be patur over here because of hatra safek. Forget about lavani takdeyase. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda goes to lavani takdeyase shows you that he believes hatra safek would have worked. And it would have been a lav. Get malkot, according to that. Only thing that makes it that you don't get malkot is lav and itak deseh. Reish Lakish daik hochi. And Reish Lakish makes another deal. Time out the ba'katuv. The reason here you're patur is because it's a lav and itak deseh. Halo ba'katuv. Had it not been for the lav and itak deseh, loke. You would have gotten malkot. Alma. You would conclude from that, lav shein bo maseh, loke na lav. Because this is a passive violation. You are not allowed to leave over the korban. You don't do anything active to leave it over. You simply wait and don't eat it, and that leaves it over. So this is a lav shein bo maseh. There's no activity in the violation of the lav. It is a passive violation. And he says, had it been that a passive violation would not get you malkot, then you would never need to go to lav anitak deaseh. So it must be that Rabbi Yehuda believes that a passive lav does get you malkot, and the only reason you're patur over here is because of lav anitak deaseh. So they're both medayek at Rabbi Yehuda's position, that Rabbi Yehuda must believe that the underlying lav would have gotten malkot had it not been for the lav anitak deaseh. The underlying lav has two characteristics to it, one of which is hatrat safek, the other one is lav shein bo maseh. And Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish each pick up on one of those and say, oh, you're chayav malkot. But obviously the question is, the other one still exists, and that's what the Gemara says. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish nami havadai hatrat safeku. Even according to Rabbi Shimon Lakish, there's still hatrat safek over here. Even if you say that Rabbi Yehuda believes lav shein bo maseh you get malkot for, now you need lav anitak deaseh to undermine it? Maybe not. Why can't you just say it's hatrat safek and it doesn't work? How come Reish Lakish doesn't recognize that possibility over here? So Savalak idach tana de Rabbi Yehuda. He holds like the other tana of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanya. Hika zeh v'chazer v'hika zeh. If he hits one and then he hits the other, Kilel zeh, he curses one, because of a kilel zeh, and then he curses the other. Yigashneh bevatachat, or he hits them both simultaneously. O kilel shneh bevatachat, or he curses them both simultaneously. Chayav, he is chayav. The case we're speaking about here is an individual who did not wait the requisite time between marriages, which is a woman, after her husband divorces her or passes away, she has to wait 3 months, a buffer time, to make sure that she's not pregnant. Or if she is pregnant, we know that that child belonged to the first husband and not to the second husband. She did not wait that requisite time. She got married within a month or 2 months. And then we find that she's pregnant and she gives birth. We're uncertain as to whether the baby was carried full term, and that is 9 months from the first husband, or it was a premature baby, but in their days, the premature baby survived at this level, which was 7 months. We're not sure if it's 7 months from the second husband. So we actually don't know who the father of this child is. There's a safek. There is a lav against hitting one's parents. There's a lav against cursing one's parents. Over here, he doesn't know which one of the two individuals is his father. So in a case where he hits both, or in a case where he curses both individuals, then by definition, one of the two was his father, and he's in violation of that lav. And that's what the Braita is speaking about. It says whether he does it sequentially, or he does it in one shot, in either of those cases, he will be chayav, according to the Tana Kama, for violating either cursing one's parents or hitting one's parents, because you got both fathers in here who are the safek fathers. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, bevat achat chayav, you do it simultaneously, you're chayav. Bezeachazeh, patur. If you do it sequentially, then you are patur. The reason being that when you do it bevat achat, then you are doing it with a hatrat vadai. There's no question when you give him hatra'ah at that point in time, he for sure is hitting his father immediately afterwards. When he does it b'zeh chazeh, when he does it sequentially, then you don't have a certainty that the hatra'ah that you gave him will result in an immediate hitting of the father, immediate cursing of the father, because there might be a buffer between the time first one he hits and the second one he hits. And because of that, it becomes a hatra'ah safek, because each time when you warn him before hitting that individual, we're not certain that that individual is the father. So that way, you have now hatrat safek. And what you see from this is Rabbi Yehuda believes, hatrat safek, lo shma hatra'ah. And so, the Rabbeinu Chananel explains over here, b'zeh chazer patur. Why are you patur when it's sequential? Yibnei shibmatrin bo kach omrim lo. Because when you give in hatra, you say, al takeh zeh, she'im takzir v'takeh ha'acher, titchayev. Don't hit this individual. Because if you hit him and the next person, then you're going to be chayav. The way the Rabbeinu Chananel phrases the hatra'ah is given in one shot, which says, if you hit both of them, then you're going to be chayav. If you hit this one, don't hit him, because then if you hit the second one, you're definitely going to be chayav. So at that point in time, you give the hatra'ah for both incidents, and then you are chayav according to one who says hatrat safek shmei hatra'ah. According to one who says hatrat safek lo shmei hatra'ah, then you are not chayav in that instance because the hatra'ah that you're giving is not certain. And so it's a hatra'ah zu b'safek, shitakein shalo yakeh, b'shalo yikalel acher. Maybe never hit the second one, or maybe never curse the second one. So the Rabbeinu Chananel expresses the hatra'ah as being a hatra'ah that says, don't hit this one, because if you hit the next one, then you're for sure chayav. You could have looked at hatra'ah safek simply being, don't hit him, because maybe he's your father. And then the second one, don't hit him because maybe your father. What you see from the Rabbeinu Chananel is that the hatrat safek is given, according to Rabbi Yochanan, at the outset. And you give the hatra'ah for all the possibilities. And that's what many point out, that when you give hatra'ah, even if you believe hatrat safek shma hatra'ah, in the hatra'ah you have to give the outcomes of the possibilities. If you hit X, if you hit Y, if you do X, if you do Y, if you're mevatel the aseh, you have to give him the different options as to what will be the outcome, and you have to spell it out up front in the hatra'ah. Because otherwise, you could have just explained it that you gave a hatra'ah for each incident separately. And you say, look, maybe this is your father. I'm warning you, if it is your father, you should get malkot. Then he'd say the second one, listen, this might be your father. If you hit him, you should get malkot. And now when you mitstarate them together, they for sure gets malkot because you gave him a warning for both and he hit both. But in that way, you would separate the hatra'ah out, which is not what the Rabbeinu Chananel suggests. Rabbeinu Chananel suggests that the way to do hatra'ah safek and have it work is to have it all combined into one hatra'ah that leaves out the possibilities of what could go wrong there. So now, Reish Lakish says, I have another braita that says that Rabbi Yehuda believes that hatra'ah safek lo shmei hatra'ah. So now, that still really doesn't solve the problem because the braita before was the case of hatra'ah safek. And lav shein bo maseh. So why is it that Reish Lakish is medayik about the lav shein bo maseh and not medayik about the hatrat safek? So what he says is that we have another braita that shows us the Reish's position is hatrat safek lo shma hatra'ah. It must be that this Tana believes that there is a source for hatrat safek lo shma hatra'ah from somewhere else. And because he has that source that Rabbi Yehuda says that lavanita kasei is patur, and the only reason it could be, according to that Tana, given his position that hatrat safek lo shma hatra'ah, then the only reason Rabbi Yehuda would say, by notar, would say that the tour is from lav anitak de'aseh, is because lav shein bo maseh lo kina lav. And that's why he brings in lav shenitak de'aseh. But had it been that he was also patur for both Lavshein Bomase and Ashrat Safek, then he should have mentioned that. The fact that he doesn't mention that shows you that Lavshein Bomase Lokin Alav, because if he believed that Ashrat Safek Losh Mahatra and Lavshein Bomase in Lokin Alav, then that should have been the reason that you don't get Malkotir and not Lavani Taktiase. So if you combine the issues, which is Ashrat Safek Losh Mahatra, and he brings Lavani Taktiase, then it means that the missing piece of the puzzle is that Lav Shein Bo Maseh Lokin Alav. Then Rabbi Yochanan Nami Havade Lav Shein Bo Maseh. Again, Rabbi Yochanan has the same problem Reish Lakish has, which is that the case of Notar is also a passive violation. Savalaki Ha Damar Rabbi Dibrav and Amar Rabbi Amram Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Rabbi Yochanan Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Yosi Aglili Kol Lota Sesh B'Torah Lav Sheish Bo Maseh Lokin Alav. Any violation of a negative commandment of the Torah, if it is a lav that has an action associated with it, you violate it by actively engaging, then you get makot. Lav shein bo maaseh, ein lokin alav. If it is a passive lav that you violate through passivity, then you don't get makot, chutz. The exception of anishba, umeimar, vamikalel tchaveru b'shem. These are all items where technically they're a lav shein bo maaseh because they come through dibur and not through activity. We do have positions that we've seen that say that dibur is considered to be a maaseh. So you can say, with the exception of these, because they're classified as a maaseh, or with the exception of these, because that is their maaseh, which is that nishba, taking a shvua, meimar, you do tmura, where you exchange an animal for another animal, or mikalot chaveru b'shem, you curse someone using the shem Hashem. In all of those instances, you will be chayav. So even though it's a lav shein bo maaseh, you still will get malkot. Rashi over here raises an issue. If you remember from yesterday's daf, we had the case that we said Reish Lakish and Yochanan were arguing about was a case of shvua sho'ochel kikar zeh hayom. Taking shvua, they'll eat the kikar today. Vavar hayom v'lo achla. And the day went by and he didn't eat it. V'Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish both say you don't get malkot for that, each giving their own reason. But according to Rav Yochanan, why wouldn't you get malkot? It's a classic case of shvu'ah, where he says you do get malkot because it is considered to be a maaseh. Yet Rabbi Yochanan deemed it to be a lav shein bo maaseh. So Rashi already jumps us ahead to Masechet Shvuot, which we will do upcoming. And there in Masechet Shvuot, it says that the malkot that come for taking a shvu'ah only apply to three cases. They apply to a shvu'ah she'avar, a shvu'ah in the past. Because when you take a shvua about the past, by definition, at the moment you take the shvua, you're lying. So we know already that it's a shvua sheker at that moment. When you take a shvua about the future, then it only is in a case where you take a shvua not to do something. If you take a shvua not to do something, and then you violate it by doing that action, you will get malkot. On the other hand, the one case of shvuot, where you don't get malkot, and that the Gemara in Shvot learns from the Psukim, that deem a shvua that you take problematic if you are lying or you do something wrong, that in the Avar, in the past, you get malkot, and the Atid, you get malkot if it's formulated in the negative. But if it's formulated in the positive, which is shvua that I will eat, and then you don't eat, you won't get malkot for that, despite the fact that you get malkot for a shvua. It is the one exception to the categories of shvua where you will not get malkot if you take a shvua by davar she'im bo maaseh, where you take a positive shvua where you say, I will eat it, and you violate it by not eating it. If it's in the future, there you won't get malkot. So Rashi says, you're right. Rabbi Yochanan does believe that shvua does get malkot, but the case we spoke about before was that one exceptional case where you won't get malkot for it. Now Gemara says, kasha derab Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda himself has stirot over here. We have Rabbi Yehuda telling us, lav shein bo maaseh, no malkot. We have Rabbi Yehuda telling us, hatrat safek, no malkot. And then Rabbi Yehuda telling us by notar that it's a lav anitak de'aseh, implying that lav shein bo maaseh and hatrat safek would get malkot. So how do you reconcile between Rabbi Yehuda? Either of Shimon Lakish, trei tana'i, alibud Rabbi Yehuda. Shimon Lakish, it is two tana'im that are proffering the position of Rabbi Yehuda. By notar, it's one tana. And by the other braita that we brought about the fathers, that is another Tana that brings Rabbi Yehuda's position. And Reish Lakish says that I subscribe to the position of Rabbi Yehuda that Hatrat Safek is Lo Shema Hatra'ah, and therefore you would not get Malkot for it. And therefore, by the case of notar, the reason you're patur, because of lani takta se, is because you would have been chayav for lav shein bo maase. But eno chanami, a trat safek also would be a patur, according to this other tano. Either Rabbi Yochanan lo kasha, hadidei hadarabe. Rabbi Yochanan, he can resolve the stira, because over here, Rabbi Yochanan is quoting his Rebbe, Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Well, it's probably not his Rebbe, because it says mishum. Mishum generally means that it is not your Rebbe Amufak, but rather someone who you have memrod from, but it's not your Rebbe Amufak. We saw that in Baba Batra, and the Rashbam explained to us the word mishum. And we see it many times, Rabbi Yochanan, mishum, Rabbi Shum Bayochai. He says the name Rabbi Shum Bayochai, it's very unlikely that Rabbi Yochanan saw Rabbi Shim Bayochai, and even if he did, he was very young. And the reason it says Mishum is because he's bringing memrod from him, but that doesn't mean he was his Rebbe. He's not saying it as the name of a Rebbe. So do over here. I have to say Rabbi Yehuda Mishum, Rabbi Yosef Lili means it's not necessarily his Rebbe, but he's bringing in the name of someone else. Rabbi Yehuda himself believes, Lav Shein Bo Maase Lokin Alav, but Rabbi Yehuda in the name of his Rebbe, or Rabbi Yosef Lili says, Lav Shein Bo Maase Ain't looking alive, and Rabbi Yochanan will say that I subscribe to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, that he brings the name of his Rebbe, that Lav Shein Bo Maase Lokin Alav, you do get Malkot for it. And therefore, the need for Lav Nitak Tasei by Notar is because Hatrat Safek Shma Hatra'a. Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Chulin. Tanan Hatam, Hanotel Eim Alabanim. A person who takes the babies while the mother is still there, which is a violation of the Shiluach HaKein, where you have an obligation to shoo away the mother bird before you take the eggs or you take the babies. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Loke, Veino Mishaleach. Rabbi Yehuda believes you get Malkot, and you can't send away the mother bird after the fact. V'chomim Omim, Mishaleach, Veino Loke. You send it away, and you don't get Malkot. Zakal, what's the position of the Chachamim? Kol mitzvot lo taseh, sheyesh bakumaseh, any lo taseh that's a kumaseh alav ani takteseh, Ein chayavin alav, you don't get malkot for it. Implying that the ratio of the Mishnah, who's Rabbi Yehuda, believes that this is not a lav hanitak de'asei. And that's what Rashi says. Rashi says it is not a lav hanitak de'asei, but rather a lav shikadmo esei. It's a lav where the esei preceded the lav. As opposed to a lav hanitak de'asei, which is you have to do the lav, and once you've done the lav, it's shaleach ta'shaleach etaim, then send away the mother bird, and you see that it's a rectification of the problem. Over here, he says that's not the case. That the shaleach, the shalach, the aim is a requirement even before you violate the lav. Or maybe only a requirement before you violate the lav. That's the way Rashi reads it. Shoo away the mother bird in order to take the eggs. Because if you don't do that, you're going to end up violating the lav of taking the banim when you didn't shoo away the mother bird. So the assay precedes the lav, and therefore you get malkot for it. That's Rashi's view of it. The Ritva, the Shita Tos, says you can't explain that way because it says over here in the Pasuk, Ki karei gan sibor lefenecha baderech b'chol eitz o al haaretz efrochim oveitzim v'aim rovetzed al efrochim oveitzim lo tikach haim al banim shaleach tishalach et haim et banim tikach lach manitav lach v'arach tayamim. So you see here that the lav precedes the assay. And according to the Ritva, who says that it all has to do with how it's written in the Torah, that's what we saw yesterday, over here, you have the lav written before the essay. So you can't explain it like Rashi, that it is, lo tikach haim habanim, and then shaleach tishalach is an essay shekadmo, the lav, because over here the essay comes after the lav. So then why does Rabbi Yehuda say that you get malkot over here? Because he reads it as, lo tikach haim habanim, shaleach tishalach et ha'im, ve'et habanim et tikach lach, that the shaleach tishalach et ha'im is only relevant Ritvala sees this as being an extension of the lav. I mean, it's not a rectification of the lav, but rather what to do. Don't do this, but rather this. Not if you do this, then do this. And so the assay is jointly together with the lav, and therefore you don't have a lav and itak the assay over here. Rav Yochanan. Emanuel azot v'od acheret. We only have this one and one other. So now Rabbi Yochanan says, this is the only lav hanitak de'asei, besides one other that we have. Now of course, you can't say in the words of Rabbi Yochanan that there are no other lavin hanitakim la'asei, because we've already brought a whole bunch of them down. You have notar, there's gzela, but we know that there are many lavin that are nitakim la'asei. So you can't be making a statement that there are only two of these examples in the Torah. So what we have to suggest here, and this is how Rashi explains it, which is that they saying that there are only two Laban Itakli Aseis where you could end up with Malkot for violating the law. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan in yesterday's daf says that the only way to violate a Laban Itakli Asei is to be Mevatel the Asei. So Rabbi Yochanan says that there are only two Lavin that have an Asei that rectifies it, where you can be Mevatel the Asei and get Malkot for it. One of them is Shiluach HaKein, which is Shaleach Tishalach Etaim Vayet Abanim Tikach Lach. Over there, you can get rid of the mother bird. If you either don't shoo away the mother bird, you hold it in your hand and don't shoo it away, then you're in violation of the one, like Rish Lakish says yesterday, Kiyem Velo Kiyem. There you were not Mekayim the Asei. And so you're in violation of the law. According to the one who says Bitlo Velo Bitlo, that's Rabbi Yochanan, then you can be Mevatel the Asei by shechting the mother bird. You shecht the mother bird, you can no longer shoo away the mother bird because you shechted the mother bird. So in each of those cases, you have a way to rid yourself of the Asei to the point where you'll get Malkot for the law. So according to Rashi, the Balei Tosafot, who said that Rabbi Yochanan's position is Bitlo Velo Bitlo, then we have a manifestation in Batel that gets rid of this Asei and allows you to get Malkot for Shiluach HaKein. According to the Rabbeinu Chananu, who says Rabbi Yochanan's position is Kiyem Velo Kiyem, you can also come up with a scenario where it will work. He says, that's the only case, plus one more. And obviously, we want to know what that one more is. Amalei Rabbi Lazar, Heicha, where is it? What's the other one? Amalei, L'chi Tishkach. Go out and look, and you'll find it. Nafak Dak V'ashkach. He went out, and he was going through his learning, and he found, D'tanya, we have a breita. Ones, Shigiresh, a rapist that divorces his wife. Im Yisrael hu, if he is a regular Yisrael, Machzir Ve'en Elokeh. He takes the woman back and doesn't get Malkot. Lav Anitak Ve'aseh. V'im Kohen hu, if he's a Kohen, Lokeh Ve'en Machzir, because a Kohen may not marry a Grusha, so he can't be Machzir Grushato. And he was Mvato the Aseh, and he gets Malkot. Mar says, Anicha Laman Detane Kimo Velo Kimo. That works well according to the one who says that if you're Mekayim Nesei or not Mekayim Nesei, then you get Malkot. Elaman Detani Bitlo Velo Bitlo. According to the one who says that if you're Mevatel the Asei, then you get Malkot. Bishlam Agavi Shiluach HaKein. By Shiluach HaKein Mishkachat La. You can find a case like that, which again, we say was shechting the mother bird. Elo Ones Bitlo Velo Bitlo Heich Mishkachat La. By the case of rape, how do you have a case where you're mevatel the asei? By the Kohen, he can't be mekayim the asei. It's not mevatel the asei, he just can't be mekayim it because he has a law that blocks him from doing it. But with regards to Yisrael, how can you have a case where Yisrael would be mevatel the asei? He would prevent himself from remarrying this woman. Either katlo, it's a simple way, he kills her. If he kills the woman, he can't marry anymore, he's mevatel the asei. The only problem with that is, kamle b'derabimine. Then he's not going to get punished for the Malkot. He's going to get punished for the death penalty that he engaged in. He killed the woman. That's commonly the rabbi. Meaning, forget about Malkot. We're dealing with capital punishment now. The Balei Tosafot ask, what about the fact that maybe she died of her own? She died of natural causes. Why can't that be a bitul asei? He says, that's not a bitul asei because he didn't do anything to be mevatel the asei. You're right, the asei is gone. But he didn't do it. He wasn't the one who was mevatel the asei. But then he says, maybe he killed her v'shogeg. Enu mitkaven. It was unintentional. So maybe over there, that should be the case. When he kills her unintentionally, he is mevatel the asei. And there is no kimle v'derabemine. Tosafot says, that's no different than meita me'aleha. He says, that's no different than her dying of natural causes. Because just like by her dying of natural causes, you don't call it bitul asei, because he didn't intend for it. So too, by killing bishogeg, that's a davar she'enu mitkaven. He has no intent for this action, so he doesn't intend to be mevatel the asei. It might be that it happens that he's mevatel the asei, but that happens too when she dies of natural causes. As the Tosafot says, even killing bishogeg doesn't solve your problem. I think the other way to solve the problem is simply to say that mitat shogegin also has a din of Kimlei Durabamine, which is that we have in other places that not only Mita B'mezid gets you the exemption of Kimlei Durabamine, but even Mita Shogeg gets you a Kimlei Durabamine. And you can see here in the Bach that he suggests that this is, according to the Mandamar, that for mitat shogegin you do get malkot, but as the Marsha points out, that still results in a ptur of kamle derabbi minei. But he points out here that the malkot and the kamle derabbi minei of mitat shogegin actually are deriving from a different source, and because they come from separate sources, in this case you might not say kamle derabbi minei of the mitat shogegin to get rid of the malkot, which are associated with his inability to remarry this woman. So now, that can't be the solution. So Amar Rav Shimi Mechuz Noah, Kigon, Shekiba La Kiddushin Me'acher. He accepted for her Kiddushin from another person. He married her off to another individual. So that is Mavato Liaseh. So Amar Rav, what exactly is the case here? Rav seems unlikely because Rav Shimi Mechuz Noah is younger than Rav. So it would be unlikely that Rav is commenting on his position, and therefore you can see on the side here, they changed it to Rava. So Amar Rava, Isha Vite Shaliach, if she made him into a proxy, a messenger for her, Ihi Kat Mevatlele. It's not him that is Mevatlele Asay, it's her that is Mevatlele Asay. She's choosing to marry someone else. And she's just using him as a Shaliach to get that marriage done. And that means that he's not Mevatlele Asay. She is Mevatlele Asay, and she has a right to do so. She has a right to choose not to get married to him. Ihi Lo Shavite Shaliach. If she didn't make him into a messenger, Ko Kamine, Balav Kumhi. What right does he have to marry this woman off as a proxy when he isn't empowered to be a messenger to marry her off? So it doesn't matter that he accepted Kiddushin on her behalf. If he's not empowered, he did nothing. If he is empowered, she's the one acting. And he's acting on her behalf. He's not doing it of his own volition. And that means he's not the vato de asay. Case where he took a neder birabim. And a neder birabim is something that does not have hatara, does not have the ability to be undone. So his neder now prevents him from marrying this woman, which is a bitul asay. If you take a neder in public, in lo hafara, there's no way to do hatarat nederim with it. According to one who says you still can do hatarat nederim with neder birabim, that's not a nedu birabim, but rather al-dat rabim. Damar ha-meimar, and this all works because the meimar says, hilchata neder shu dar birabim, neder that's taken in public, yesh lo hafara, you do have ability to get hatarat nedarim. Al-dat rabim, it's done on the consensus of the rabim, in lo hafara, you can never unwind it. So this is a permanent neder in that case. As Rashi explains over here, al-dat rabim means on the basis of the public consensus, Baldat Beitin and Beitin, which means basically that on the basis of all your consensus over here and the Beitin over here, you all agree that I'm taking this neder and whatever the outcome or whatever he says in the neder. Now that neder doesn't have hatara according to anyone because the basic idea is you'll never get enough consensus to get him hatara nederim. If you did it on the basis of the acquiescence of all the parties that are there, and that's how the neder went into effect, that means in order to get hatara, you have to get the consensus to agree to the hatara. And you'll never find that, because the public at large is too big, and to get everybody to think the same way, and do the same thing, to do hatarat nedarim, is nearly impossible. And for that reason, we won't allow there, or there can't be a hatarat nedarim. So given that, the hatarat nedarim is impossible. If it's impossible, that neder now prevents him from marrying this woman. And that's why he's mevatel the asay. He can't marry the woman because he took a neder that blocks him from marrying the woman. Now Rashi says he took the neder to matzah ba'avon because he found something wrong with her. So the Bach explains over here, if you look in that Gota Bach, the reason Rashi said that is because otherwise the neder would not be chal. He's mishubadla. He has an obligation in the Torah to marry her. He can't take a neder to undermine his obligation. The only reason he'd have a right to take a neder to undermine his obligation is if he, matzah ba'avon. He found something wrong with her, and that's what permitted him to take the neder. The Bali of Tosafot say, what do you mean? If there's something wrong with her, the obligation to marry her is now gone. Because he doesn't have to marry her if there's some problem with her. And therefore, it can't be matzah ba'avon. If he's matzah ba'avon, then there's no obligation to marry her, and he's not mevatel the asay. Because she did something wrong. She slept with another man. She did something that would not make it appealing to him to marry her or continue to be married to her. So if she has an extramarital affair after he marries her, then he doesn't have to stay together with her. He doesn't have an obligation to stay with her. He can divorce her at that point. So now Tosafot suggests that the case here is a case where he is obligated to marry her, but he takes a neder in a way or in a manner that does not upend the obligation of the Torah. And we spent a lot of time this in Masechet Tubot as well as Masechet Nedarim, where a person can take a neder through an object and yet not be violating the Torah's prescription. And over here he says, Kon damar, konem tashmishech alai. He assers intimate relations with this woman. So, again, he has an obligation to marry her, but part of the requirements of marriage are the conjugal rights of the woman. But through his nether, he prevented his ability to accomplish the conjugal rights, and in that way, he cannot now marry her because he won't be able to uphold his obligations as a married individual. So he doesn't go up against the Torah's prescription, marry her. He could marry her. The problem is that if he marries her, he's going to fail as a husband because he can't provide for her the conjugal rights. And so that's how he took the neder, that is mevatel the aseh, because this will prevent him in the end from marrying her without directly attacking the aseh of the Torah to marry her. He did it in a side way, which is he took out some of the obligations that he would have if he did marry her. So that's the way the Baalei Tosafot deal with it. Ramban, on the other hand, in defense of Rashi, suggests possibly that the case here of avon is not a case of a full-fledged avon where he has a right not to marry her, but rumors were circulating. There were rumors about her behavior circulating, and he divorced her and took a neder al dat rabim not to marry this woman based on these rumors. And we know from the Gemara in Gittin that we do that because we don't want him to have regret later on. Because when he hears the rumors, he says, I'm getting divorced because of these rumors. Later on, we find the rumors are not true. The woman's moved on in life, and she's gotten married. And he said, had I known the rumors weren't true, I would never have divorced her. That would undermine the divorce and then create a whole problem later on. So we say to him is, know that if you're divorcing her based on this rumor, that you're going to take a neder of that rabim, that you're not going to reverse this divorce. It's going to be permanent, even if we find out that the rumors are not true. So that would be the case that we would bring over here, where he would have a right to divorce her because of the rumors, but he would have to take a neder not to marry her again, and then we find out the rumors aren't true, and the obligation to stay married to her now comes back, because he has an obligation because of the rape before that to marry her. And if that's the case, his neder now prevents him from marrying her, and that is a neder that is mevato de aseh. So that's how the Ritva comes to the defense of Rashi, based on the questions of the Baalei HaTosafot. So now we found a case in which you can be mevato de aseh and get malkot. Two cases of a lavan itak de aseh, where you mevato de aseh and you get malkot. One of them is shluach hakein, where if you shech the mother bird, you mevato de aseh and you get malkot. And the case here, where if he takes a neder al dat rabim, then he can't be matir the neder, and the neder prevents him from marrying the woman, and therefore he's mevatel the aseh of the requirement to marry this woman or stay married to this woman after he has raped her. Vituleka. It says there are no more than these two. Vaika. Don't we have the case of gezel? By gezel, by theft, the Rachman Amar, lo tigzol, do not steal. Veshivet gzela, and then it says if you do steal, you have to return the gzela. Mashkon, you have the case of Mashkon, the Rachman Amar, lo tavo beto lavot avoto, don't come to his house to take a piece of collateral, hashiv, tavshiv lo ha'avot kivo ha'shemesh, and if you do take that collateral and you violate that, then you have to return the collateral to him when the sun sets, or in the reverse, in the sunrise, depending on what object you took, whether it was a day object or a night object, you have to return to him every day. And we can find instances where you'll violate this assay, b'kimo v'lo kimo. That's where he refuses to pay back the money or he refuses to give the mashkon back. That'll be kimo v'lo kimo. B'lo v'lo b'lo is if he destroys the object. The object that he's supposed to return, if he destroys it, or the mashkon that he took, he destroys it, then in either of those cases, it's in violation of the lav because he ruined the possibility of doing the assay anymore, of returning the object. Since over there he's chayav in monetary recompense, he doesn't get malkot and pay. So over here, the simplest way to read it, is a basic premise that we have before, which is that you can't get two punishments over here. You can't get the punishment of both malkot and tashlumim. Since he has to make tashlumim over here, then by definition, he won't get malkot. That is because by the case of Zela and the case of Mashkon, even if the object is destroyed, you still have an obligation to return the value of the object. You have to return the monetary value, even though the object is not around anymore. Yes, you mevatel the assay of returning the object, but that assay also includes monetary compensation if the object's not available to return. So now you're making monetary compensation. Monetary compensation doesn't allow for loke umishalem, and it wipes out the malkot. So that's the simplest way to read it. On the other hand, by those of vote, dispel that and say you can't say that the reason here that you are patur is because in a loke umishalem of a leka the frushe, don't explain the tarte lo abdinanai. You can't do two things to him, malkot umamon, mishum kedei rishato. Because of kedei rishato, which is what it sounds like in the Gemara, in loke mishalem, Tosafot says there is a girsa like our Gemara, but there were alternate girsa to also that simply said, deish lo mamon, lo yilake. Since it has mamon, you don't get malkot. Over there, it's a different statement than in loke mishalem, which sounds like that formulation that we have by kedei rishato. He says, but you can't say that, because, number one, Rabbi Yochanan's of the opinion, when you have monetary compensation and malkot, and you have to give one of the two punishments, Rabbi Yochanan believes you get malkot, and you don't pay. So in this case, why would Rabbi Yochanan say that you pay and don't get malkot? That's the opposite of his position everywhere else. In addition, he says, Imkein my parech. What is the next question of the Gemara? The next question of the Gemara doesn't make any sense, and I'll explain in a second, based on this Tosafot, why that doesn't make sense. The Tosafot rejects this idea that it's in a loke mishalem, but rather he says that the tashlumim are mekayim the assay. Just because you destroy the object does not mean that you've now not done the assay. The fact that you can pay for it is in a form of accomplishment of the assay, and you're not mevatel the assay in that way. And that's how the Baal Yad Tosafot explain it. So matkibla Rabbi Zeira, haike mashkono, shoger, umeta ger. What about the case where you have a mashkon of a ger? Now remember that a ger that converts is ke tinok shenolad dami. He has no relatives. If he has no children after he converted, then he has no living relatives because we consider him to be a newborn entity when he joined the Jewish faith. And that means that if he passes away without having children after converting, he has no inheritors. So now you have a mashkon of the ger, and the ger passes away. Now you have no ability to return the money to the ger. Now you have a case where you have a mashkon that if you destroy it, and you could have made monetary compensation, but the ger is no longer around to give him the compensation. Normally with someone else, if you can't give it to the individual, you give it to his yorshim, and you accomplish the return of that money by giving it to the yorshim. Over here, the ger has no yorshim, and so therefore, you can't do the return of the money. Here, you're mevatel the assay. Here, if you destroyed the mashkon, then you would have to make monetary compensation. The problem is that the ger passed away now, and there's nobody to make monetary compensation to. That means you were mevatel the assay. The Gemara's answer is, hatam gavra bar tashlumimu. Here, the person is obligated to pay. Vishibud the ger hu the kapoka. He still has an obligation to pay, or he does pay, but there's no way to execute on the payment. I mean that he can accomplish the assay, but there's just a problem, which is that there's no one on the other end to collect it. At the point that he destroyed the mashkon, he owed money to the ger at that time. Now the ger passes away, so the placement of the money is the problem, not the fact that you have to pay. You're still obligated to pay. The assay is still there. But the fact is that you can't do the assay because the ger disappeared, and therefore the assay can't be made through the payment. But the obligation to pay is still in effect. And so therefore, the assay is still intact, in essence. Only because the ger passed away, you can't execute it, or it happened, as you said, memela. Maybe the death of the ger, the assay went away then. Not when you burnt the mashkon. When you burnt the mashkon, you had to pay money to the ger. Only once he passed away could you not do it. So it wasn't your burning of the mashkon, it was the passing away of the ger that caused it, or happened in memela. And that's why Tosafot says that you can't say loke mishalem is the reason over here. Over here you're still obligated to pay. The Gemara's answer is, oh, you're obligated to, you don't have to pay. Okay, well if you don't have to pay, then you should get malkot. Even if you're obligated to pay, but you don't pay, then in the case of loke mishalem, it's kedei rishato, you only get one punishment. Over here there is only one punishment. You're going to get malkot. You're not going to make payment. So Tosafot says that can't be the reason why you're patur in all these cases. The reason you're patur in all these cases is because you can still be mekayim the assay through the payment, or you are mekayim the assay through the payment, even if you don't return the original object. So if you believe that the problem is kedei rishato, then if you have nobody to pay it to, you're not paying anything, you should get malkot. On the other hand, if you believe that as long as the assay is alive, then you don't get malkot, the assay is still alive here. You have money, you're ready to pay for it, but you just can't pay to anybody. There's nobody there on the other end to receive it. So that means either the assay is still intact, but it's a technical problem, or you could just say that maybe the assay disappeared here, but it didn't disappear when you destroyed the mashkon. It disappeared when the ger died, and his dying made it memela happen that the assay went away. It wasn't your doing. It's the equivalent of the woman passing away when you have to marry her by the case of rape. That was a natural causes, and it had nothing to do with you. It happened memela. That's not called bitul assay. So for either of those two reasons over here, there is no bitul assay. Svayika peya. What about peya? Rachman Amar, Pasuk says, lo techale pa'atzadecha. You may not cut off the corner of your field. You must leave it for the daniv lagerta zovotam. You have to leave it for those that are impoverished. So now the way the pasuk reads is, don't cut the corner of your field. You should be leaving it for the daniv lagerta zovotam. The way the Gemara is reading now is it's a lavani takdesei. If you do cut the corner of your field, you still must give it to the daniv lagerta zovotam. That's a zovotam. The mishkacha labi kimo velo kimo. Obviously, we can find it in a case where he refuses to be mikayim the assay. We say to him, don't cut down the corner of your field. He cuts it down. We say, now, rectify that by giving it to the ani, the ger, and the atom. And he says, I refuse. I'm not giving it to them. That's a lack of kiyum of the assay, and you get makot. Bitlo, velo, bitlo. How are you mivata the assay? The tanan. Mitzvat peya lafrish min akama. Peya is when the grain is still standing. You're supposed to leave it in the field, uncut. Lo yifrish min akama. If you didn't leave the corner of the field with the standing grain, mafrishmin omrim, then you take it from the piles, the sheaves, the bundles. Lo yifrishmin omrim. If you didn't take it from them, mafrishmin akri. Then he takes it from the pile once you've already processed the wheat or whatever grain you're speaking about and you have the kernels now, a pile of the kernels, then you take it from there. Ad shelo meireach. That's until you do the final stage, which is the smoothing of the pile, which is what brings on the obligation of Trumot and Masrot. Mircho, if you do that final stage and now you're Chayav and Trumot and Masrot, then Maaser v'notein lo. You take off Trumot and Masrot and you give it them. Because had they taken Peah from the field, there'd be no obligation of Trumot and Masrot. Peah is patur from Trumot and Masrot. Over here now, if you only give him post a Meiruach HaKri and you don't take off the Trumot and Masrot before you give it to him, you're actually costing him money now. The same volume of peyah that he gets is going to net him less now because he's going to have to give the Trumot and Masrot. So we make you take off the Trumot and Masrot first, and then the net amount will have to equal what the peyah would have been in the field. But after that point in time, we don't see you having to give peyah. The reason being is, after Meiruach HaKri, the next stage is milling of the kernels. When you mill the kernels into flour, that's what's called shinoi. That's already a change, and your koneb is shinoi. Your konah, the item, through gezel in a sense, because you did a shinui to it, it's now yours, and there's no longer an obligation of peah. So if you mill the grains into flour, you're mevatel the assay, the ability to return the peah. The obligation of peah goes away. So kid the Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yochanan will hold like Rabbi Yishmael, damar af mafrish min aisa, that even after you processed the grains and made it into flour, even after you make it into dough, you're still chayav to be mafrish peyah, even from the dough. I says, okay, by Rabbi Shmuel, all you're doing is postponing that inevitable time when you don't have to give peyah anymore. So over by the Tanakama, it's once you turn it from a grain into flour. For Rabbi Shmuel, it just means that once it's a dough, you give it to him then, or you eat it. You eat it, you're mevatel the assay. You take away your ability to give it anymore. So Rabbi Shmuel, nami mishkachla dachal isa. You eat the isa. Ela zot od acheret, aha. When Rabbi Yochanan meant there's this one, Shiluach HaKain, and one more, the one more was this case of Peah. Peah is another case where you can be Mevato the Asay, Aval Ones Lo. So that implies that the case of Ones, that it wasn't an example. We came up with a solution in the problem, which is the Neder of Dat Rabim would be Mevato the Asay. Hecha Damrin and Aldat Rabim in Lo Hafara. When do we say that a Neder of Dat Rabim has no Hatarat Nedarim? The Davar Shut. That is if it is some secular, optional reason that you want to take away the nether. Aval dvar mitzvah, yesh lo hafara. But if it's a mitzvah, then you can unwind or do atarat nedarim. The logic being that the problem that you have with the neder of that rabim is that you can never get a consensus to agree to undermine or be matir, undo, or nullify the nether, and that's why you can never get atarat nedarim. What we find is that when you have a mitzvah, then you can get consensus. Everybody agrees, or everybody would agree, in a case where the nether is blocking you from doing a mitzvah, that we would allow you to undermine or to nullify the nether through a tzarat nedarim, because that consensus can't be gotten. So that would be the way to read it. Tiha, like the example here, Tahu Mikre Darke, there was this teacher in the cheder, Dava Pasha Bianoke, who's a little rough on the kids. That's what Rashi says. Rashi says that he hit them too hard. He was an excellent teacher, but he hit the kids too hard. The Ritva doesn't love that explanation because he says the word pshia in general is not used for hitting. Pshia usually means that there is negligence through some sort of laziness or non-correction. And therefore he claims that the pshia was that either he wasn't mashkiach on the children, he didn't watch them so carefully, or that he didn't correct their mistakes necessarily. Adri Ravacha, Ravacha shoot him out of being a teacher because of these problems. Vahadre Ravina, and Ravina brought him back into service. So when Rav Acha took him out, Adre, he did a neder of that Rabim that this individual was no longer allowed to teach children. And so he blocked him through that neder of teaching children. Yet Ravina brings him back. To Lo Ashkach, the Dayi Kafade. There was nobody who was so good at the reading, or whether it was the teaching of the reading, or he was so careful about the reading where he taught the children. He was unusually talented in his ability to teach. He came with a package that wasn't so nice, but he was unusually talented, so he brought him back. How could he do that if it was a neder al dat rabim? How do you get a hatara for that? The answer is mitzvah. For a mitzvah, you're allowed to be matir that neder. And similarly, by the case of ones, when the person, the manes, takes the neder al dat rabim, there's still a mitzvah for him to remarry this woman. So you can't get a threat nedarim because taking away the neder will allow him to accomplish the mitzvah, and therefore there's no bitul asay, because the asay itself is what allows him to get out of the neder. So now the two cases where Rabbi Yochanan will say you can violate the law and then bivatul the asay and get makol, one will be shiluach hakein, and the second one will be peya. In case of menanes, we won't find a situation in which you can be bivatul the asay. All right, now we move on to everybody's favorite topic. Person who eats any of these creepy, crawly things, then he gets malkot. I'm Rav Yehuda. If a person, Rashi says over here, eats a worm that emerges from a cabbage, then he gets malkot. That's Rashi's view. Tabalei Tosafot bring from their Rabbeinu Tam, and it's found earlier, you can see here in the notes on the side, it's found in the Oroch and the Shiltot as well, that the word, first of all, benita, doesn't usually refer to a worm, but the word benita is used in the Gemara, the Aramaic, for a fish. That's number one. Number two is, if it is a worm that comes out of a cabbage, what is unique about a worm that comes out of a cabbage? A worm that comes out of any fruit or vegetable would have the same din, which is that you're chayav for that item because of sheretz or sheretz al aretz. So why tell me about a worm coming out of a cabbage? Alright, so that's a separate issue. What you're mentioning here is not relevant to our Gemara, but happens to be true, which is that the Gemara believes that items that emerged or are found in the fruit itself that never crawled on the ground, you're not chayav for, because you have to be chayav sheretz sheretz al aretz. Over here, it already says that a benita, the bekrava, it already came out. It already emerged from the cabbage and was crawling around, so it already has a din of sheretz sheretz al aretz. Their belief that these items that were generated inside of the fruits and vegetables were, we'll call it spontaneous generation, and therefore they're not called sheretz or sheretz al aretz until they are sheretz al aretz, because they always lived inside of the fruit. We know today that what really happens is that the eggs are laid by the mother prior to the formation of the fruit. In the original budding of the fruit and the flower, she eggs the eggs, and then the fruit grows around those eggs, because it provides a great secure environment for the larvae to grow and food around them. And so they lay them there, and these are actually eggs that are laid by a sheretz, a sheretz al aretz. Then by definition, it's a sheretz, a sheretz al aretz, because it's born from parents that were sheretz al aretz. It's laid eggs by a mother who is sheretz al aretz. That for sure is a sheretz, a sheretz al aretz. But if you believe that it was spontaneously generated inside of the item, then you would have a sheretz that was never sheretz al aretz, because it was only inside of the fruit and generated inside of the fruit. So that's the belief that they had. But here it's not relevant because it was sheretz. It's a case where it's already crawled out, and therefore you are chayav for sheretz or sheretz al aretz. So the question of Rashi is, what does that have to do with a worm in a cabbage? It could be a worm in anything. So that's why the Rabbeinu Tam favors saying that Benita is a fish. The way that the Rabbeinu Tam suggested, it's a case of a fish that's found in the fields. And you do have these phenomenon where you have fish that either when you dig down into the ground and you find the water, that there are fish in the water there, or you have fish that jump out of the rivers or between rivers, we have fields between rivers, that the fish, when its water overflows or it's wet the field, that they actually come out to, whether it's to lay eggs, or they just come out and hang out in the field, you can find fish in the furrows of the field. So the situation here is you have a fish that was in the water, but now is out in the field because there's moister water over there. Tosafot adds an additional aspect to this, is that it was a kosher fish. If it was in the water, it had fins and scales, it would be a kosher fish. But because it's not found in the water, it's found on the ground, that makes it non-kosher. The Ramban disagrees with that and says, if it's kosher in the water and just happen to find it on the ground, that doesn't change anything. It's still a kosher fish. Never even leaves. It's a daktameh. It was a non-kosher fish that's now found on the ground. And now the chiddush is that you're going to get penalized not for a shoreitz b'mayim, but sheretz a shoreitz alaretz. According to them, it's a benita fish, the bay krava. Krava means to plow. So it's a fish found in the furrows. So even though it's a fish, but because it's found on the ground and moving around over there on the ground, that gives you a violation of sheretz a shoreitz alaretz. So here, a person who eats a benita, the bay krava, malkinen lei, mishom, sheretz a shoreitz alaretz. Then you'll get the punishment not for Sheretz Amayim, but Sheretz Aretz. And that's the Chiddush, according to everyone besides Rashi. So now, Hold Achal Benita de Beikrava, someone who ate this item, Vinagde Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda gave him Malkot, based on the memory that we have here. Rav Yehuda, he followed through on it, and he gave Malkot in that case. Amrabai, Achal Potita Loke Arba'a. If you eat a Potita, you're going to get four sets of Malkot. Rashi over here says Potita is Sheretz Hamayim. It's a type of sheretz that lives in the water. So it's a water bug of some sort, and it lives in the water. For that, you're going to get four malkot. Rashi explains over here that when it comes to the malkot, that there are certain generic risurim against shratzim, which apply to any sheretz. And that is in Vayikra Yud Aleph, Pasuk Mem Gimel. It says, Al tishapsu et nafshutechem, b'chol sheretz hashoretz. Anything that crawls, you get malkot for. Number two is, Velota tamu behem, netametem bam. Don't become tamei with them, because you will be defiled if you eat them. Those are what we call the generic isurim of sheretz, and no matter what sheretz you eat, whether you eat sheretz ha'of, sheretz ha'mayim, or sheretz ha'aretz, you're gonna get those two malkot. In addition to that, the Torah also has two separate isurim of sheretz that are specifically associated with the mayim. That is in Vayikra Yud Aleph, Parshat Shmini, at the end there, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, B'chol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskeset b'yamim v'nachalim mikol sheretz ha'mayim, kol nefesh chaya asher b'mayim sheketz heim lachem, v'sheketz yu lachem mibzaram lo tocheilu v'et niblatam tishaketzu. So there's a restriction against eating water items, or water bugs, or fish, or anything that is not kosher, that doesn't have snapir v'kaskeset. In addition, in Dvarim, in Parshat Re'ei, it says, Chol Hashein lo snapir v'kaskeset lo tochelu. You may not eat it. So Rashi points out here, you have four violations. When you eat a sheretz amayim, you have two that are specifically associated with the sheretz amayim. And additionally, you have the two generic isurim of sheretz, and that gives you a total of four. On the other hand, achal nemala, if you eat an ant, loke chamesh. Mishum asher sheretz asheretz alaretz. Here is a sheretz Hashoreitz ala aretz. So once again, you have the two generic isurim that are found in Shmini, Vayikra Yud Aleph Mem Gimel, Al tishapsu et nafshutechem b'chol sheretz, v'lo tatamu behem netameitem bam. Those are two that are generic. In addition, in Pasuk Mem Aleph it says, chol sheretz, hashoreitz ala aretz, sheketz hu lo yeachel. There's a restriction against eating, it's something that crawls on the ground. In the subsequent Pasuk Mem Bet, chol oleichal gochon, v'chol oleichal arba, ad kol marbe reglayim, so again, another restriction against a sheketz or a sheretz ala aretz. That's number two. And then, in addition to that, in Pasuk Mem Dalet it says, ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, vitkanishtem v'item kedushim ki kadosh ani. Number three is, v'lo titamu nafshutechem, kol sheretz haromeis ala aretz. A third law that deals with sheretz aretz. So you have the two generic isurim, plus the three that are associated with sheretz aretz, that gets you five by the Nemala. And then, Tzira, a wasp, or a flying sheretz, Loka Shesh. You get six. You get the five that you would have gotten for sheretz aretz, because a flying sheretz is also sheretz al aretz. He also crawls on the ground. Not only does he fly up in the air. But in addition to that, you add on Mishum Sheretz Ha'ok, which is the Pasuk in Parshat Re'eh, which says in Dvarim Yudalit, Pasuk Yutet, Kol Sheretz Ha'ok, Tameidu Lachem, Lo Ye'achelu. That is an additional lav or malkot to get to six. So what it's pointing out to you here is that there are these generic Isurim, but then in particular to Mayim, Aretz, and Oph, there are different numbers of restrictions. By Mayim, it's only two. By Aretz, there's a three. And by Oph, there's the three of the Aretz plus the Oph. And that gets you the totals here of four, five, and six, depending on what you ate. And you get multiple malkot. The Rambam over here, you should just know, has a different view than all the Rishonim. And he's criticized by the Ravid as well as the Ramban. Ramban in the Sefer Mitzvot, the Ravid in Mishnah Torah, where he suggests that you can't get multiple makot for the same violation. Meaning that a Sheretz Aretz, even though they're multiple lavin, you only get one set of makot for that. But then he has to come up with a way to explain the cases over here where you're violating other additional violations besides the Sheretz Aretz. And he comes up with this innovative way to explain the Gemara, which is rejected by everyone, including the Ravid and the Ramban, who specifically speak against Rambam in those cases. Someone who holds in going to the bathroom, over mishum lo tishaksu, there is no such pasuk as lo tishaksu, it's al tishaksu et nafshotechem. That bal tishaksu, that is the term that's used, is if you hold you back from going to the bathroom, that is a violation of bal tishaksu. Now, according to most, that is a violation, this is an asmachta, just an asmachta, which is, that is inappropriate behavior, that's acting bishukatz, in a disgusting way or in a way that's inappropriate, and therefore it's bal tishaksu, you're in violation of that midrabanan if one holds back from going to the bathroom. Although, you should know that the smag, I think, is the one who does this, counts it as a mitzvah deoraita, and says that there is deoraita restriction against holding back from going to the bathroom. And we'll see later on, like in the Gemarot in Nida, that the Gemara takes this very seriously, so seriously that one is allowed to urinate in public, or one is allowed to relieve themselves in public because of the restriction of bal tishaksu, as well as the damage that can be done to the individual if they don't go to the bathroom, if they hold it in too long, the damaging properties of that. So the Gemara there says that even things that otherwise would be considered unbecoming or beyond the pale, because there's a danger involved in holding it back. That might also precipitate why the Gemara here says that it's bal tishaksu, is because of the dangers involved. They're trying to express to people this is a serious issue. Don't hold back when you need to go to the bathroom. Alright. Amar Abimi Barabai. Hande matish aman deshoti vikarno du umna. Kavar mishum lo tishaksu. One who drinks from the bloodletting horn of the bloodletter is in violation of bal tishaksu. The person draws the blood by putting in the horn that they used to use. They used to horn that had a pin at the end that drew the blood out. But he would suck on the horn, do mitzitza, to draw the blood out. Just like we do mitzitza by the case of Brit Milah. Over there you do mitzitza, but peh, supposed to be against the member itself. Most people today, in order to prevent problems of disease, use a test tube with cotton in it, and then they pull. They suck through the tube, and that pulls the blood. So that would be the mitzitza over here. So again here, it's something that is disgusting. It's something that's used to let blood. And then this person uses it as a cup to drink from. So that's a violation of bal tishaksu because of the disgusting nature of it. Maybe there's blood left over in the horn to start with. But it's a utensil that is specific for the use of bloodletting and not for drinking from. Someone who goes out and drinks from it is in violation of bal tishaksu. Again, it sounds like that this is a Nisr derabanan. Amar Rava bar Rav Huna, Yisek Tisha Nimalim, be crushed up. He blended nine ants, ve'vi'achad chai, and then he brings one that's alive. The truth is, it's not going to be alive. If it's alive, then it's very different. It's, in the end, it's going to be dead, because otherwise you won't get to a nevela, as Tosafot points out. Vishlilam the kazayit. So the nine crushed up or blended ants don't add up to a kazayit now, but he brings one more ant that is still fully intact and adds it to it. That ant now makes it that you have a whole kazayit together. Lokevav. You get 6 sets of Malkot for this. Hey Mishum Girya, 5 because of the entity which we spoke about before. Achal Nemala, we said before you get 5 sets of Malkot, 2 of the generic Sheketz, and 3 from Sheretz Ha'aretz. In addition, you get 1 more, Achal Mishum Gzayit Nevela. And the last one you get, because now you have a Gzayit of Nevela that you're eating, because this final ant, this Birya, the whole ant, together with the others, now made it up to a Gzayit of Nevela. The whole one gets you the 5 Malkot. Because as Tosafot says, that any lav in the Torah that does not have achila associated with the restriction of consuming a sheret, would then have to be a birya, a whole entity, in order to be in violation of that. Things that involve achila, you can violate with a kazayit of a mixed or crushed item. But if it doesn't mention the word achila, you can only violate it with the birya. On the other hand, nevela, and this is a chiddush of Tosafot, that there is a din of nevela by Shkatzim and Ramasim over here. But that would even apply to the 5 crushed ones and the whole one because there it's a restriction of Achila, and therefore you can violate the Isser of Nevela with all of them. Tosafot over here discusses the issue of Ein Isser Chalal Isser, and how is it that you have an Isser Nevela if there's already an Isser of Sheretz Aretz? So he discusses over here the possibility that the Isser Nevela devolves even though there are other Isurim based on Gemarot and other places. Rova Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Afilu Shnayim Vehu. Even if he has just 2 that he ground up and 1 of them and they add together to equal a Gezayit, he'll also be in violation. Rabbi Yosef Amar, Afilu Echad Vehu. Even just it and 1 other, it would also be that way. Velo Plegei, and none of them argue, Ha Birav Ravei Abizutre. Just depends on the size of the ants. How any ground up ants you need together with this 1 whole ant to get to the Gezayit. Now Tosafot over here asks, okay, it's interesting about the size of the ants, but what's the Chiddush over here? The answer that Tosafot gives is that by the case of the 9 ants that you blended up, and then the 1 whole ant, that 1 whole ant, if you blended it up, would also get it to a Gezayit. So now you would think the reason that why it's whole, it makes it into a Gezayit of Nevela is because even if you blended it, it would get you to the threshold of a Gezayit. In the case of the 2 ants and then the 1 full ant, over there if you crushed up the ant, you wouldn't get a kazayit. So the chiddush is that even though the ant as whole gets you the kazayit, but if it was crushed up or blended, it would not get you the kazayit. It's still mitzarev together with the already blended ants to get you to kazayit the nevela. And that's what Tosafot says, that is the chiddush of going from 9 down to 2. Or 1. Or you possibly could suggest, in the case we have 1 and 1, there already there's a chiddush that even though the other one doesn't make up the rove of the kazayit, and you need both of them, and maybe even the whole ant is the rove of kazayit, it's still considered to be a nevela in that case. All right, now we move on to the next part of the Mishnah. Akal tevel or meiser rishon shelo nitla trumatan. You eat tevel or you eat meiser that didn't have truma taken off of it, then you get malkot. Amarav akal tevel shel meiser ani lokeh. If you eat tevel that only has left in it the need to take off meiser ani, that's still called tevel, and you still get malkot. So in terms of the hierarchy of removing things from fruits or vegetables, the first item that comes off is bikurim, for the sheva minim that Eretz Yisrael is nitbarech b'hem, so that comes all the way up front. After that, it is truma gedola that is taken off. After the truma gedola, you take off meiser rishon. From the Maaser Rishon, you have to take off Trumat Maaser. And after the Maaser Rishon, in the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, you take off Maaser Sheni. And in the third and sixth years of the cycle, you take off the Maaser Ani. So what you would have thought is that something's only called Tevel if it contains within it something that you would get a serious punishment for if you didn't take it off. Truma and Trumat Maaser are things that end up with mita bidei shamayim if you eat them. So you can understand if you have tevel that has truma mixed into it, that you would get makot for that because that could land you in a mita bidei shamayim. If you have truma taken off, but you still have maaser rishon there, the maaser rishon includes within it trumat maaser. So you still have trumat maaser in this tevel, which is a mita bidei shamayim. Once you've taken that off, okay, now you're left with either maaser sheni or maaser ani. Maaser Sheni has a requirement to be taken up to Yerushalayim. So maybe if you don't take it off, that's a violation of taking it up to Yerushalayim, you get Malkot. If you don't get Maaser Sheni, it's a year that you get Maaser Ani. Maaser Ani is only a monetary obligation. You're mafrishit and you give it to the Aniim. If you don't give it to the Aniim, you're stealing from the Aniim, but it's chulin. through and through. There's nothing you have to do with it. You could eat it. So there you would have thought possibly that you don't get malkot for not being mafrishit or tevel. Somebody that has everything taken off besides maaser ani would not result in malkot. But Rav comes to dispel that and said you do get malkot. Come on. Who does he hold like? Tana, he holds like this Tana. The Tanya, Amar Rav Yosi Yochol Yechayav Elala Tevel Shelo Hu Rav Mimenu Kolikar. You would have thought you would only get malkot for tevel, which has nothing taken off of it. Hu Rav Mimenu Truma Gedola. You already took off Truma Gedola. Velo Hu Rav Mimenu Maaser Rishon. But you did not take off Maaser Rishon. Maaser Rishon Velo Maaser Sheni. You took off Maaser Rishon and not Maaser Sheni. Bafilo Maaser Ani, or you've taken off everything besides Maaser Ani Minayin, how do you know you still get Malkot? Tamalomar, lo tuchol lechol bisharecha. You may not eat it in your gateways. So this is a restriction that is found in Dvarim Yudbet. So over there it speaks about the requirement to bring things up to Yerushalayim, which is Maaser Sheni. Lo tuchol lechol bisharecha, maser degancha v'tirushcha v'yitzarecha. So the pasuk in Dvarim Yudbet, speaking about Maaser Sheni amongst all the other types of korbanot and things that are there, says that you need to bring them up to Yerushalayim. So that pasuk is clearly speaking about Maaser Sheni. What he says is that pasuk of Maaser Sheni, which says "Lo tuchal lechol bisharecha," uvalan in Parshat Kitavo, in the parshia of Vidui Maser, over there it says about Vidui Maser, it gives you all the things that you were supposed to take off. It says "Ki tekalel laser et kol maser tvatcha b'shana shlishit shnata maser," in the third year of the shnata maser, which is Maaser Sheni. V'natata, who do you give it to? V'levi, v'ger, v'yatom, v'almana, v'achlu bisharecha v'saveyu. And you give it to the Levi, that's the Maaser Rishon. The Ger Yatom V'Almana is the Maaser Ani. V'achlu Bisharecha V'Saveyu. They'll eat it in your gateways and be satisfied. So he sees the Bisharecha over here in Parshat Kitavo references to Maaser Ani. And the Sharecha that is mentioned in Dvarim Yudbet, which is Lo Tuchal Lechol Bisharecha, he says, well, that's the same Bisharecha that's found in Kitavo. Just like there's a restriction against eating Maaser Sheni Bisharecha, there's also a lav against eating tevel when the maaser has not been taken off, when there's bisharecha. When the maaser ani is still embedded in it, you may not eat it in your she'arim. And so he said that that's a lav, and it gives you makot for eating tevel that still has maaser ani inside of it. But marachmano lo tuchal, that you may not eat it. Amar Rav Yosef kitanaye. It's actually a makhlok kitanaim. So whether you get makot for tevel that has maaser ani in it. When it comes to Maaser Ani of Demai, which is that you bought produce from an Am Haaretz, and we have a fake as to whether he took off Trumot HaMasrot, over there, Yochanan Kohen Gadol prescribed that there's a certain way to be mafrishit in order to ensure that Trumot HaMasrot are taken off, but that you don't lose money from it. So the way that you do it is that you separate out the Trumot Gadolah, because that is something that has Amita Bidei Shemayim. Although Yochanan Gadol checked around all of Klal Yisrael and they were taking off Trumah Gedolah, so for that reason you wouldn't have to take off Trumah Gedolah. Maaser Rishon, your Mafrish, and then you take off the Trumat Maaser. That Trumat Maaser you have to give to the Kohen, because Trumat Maaser is Chayav Mita B'Dei Shemayim for someone who's a Zar and eats it. But the Maaser Rishon, which goes to the Levi, you can keep, the other 9/10 of it you can keep, because a Motzi Mechavero Alav Araya. And then you can keep it unless the Levi can prove that this required Maaser Rishon to be taken off of it. Maaser Sheni, you take off and redeem it, and then you'll eat it yourself up in Yerushalayim. And now the question is, with regards to Maaser Ani, what do you need to do? Again, Maaser Ani is only a monetary obligation. So again, we'd invoke the principle of Motzi Mechavero Alav Araya. And since the Aniim can't prove that this produce was Chayav, then you won't have to give it to the Aniim. But the fact that you don't have to give it to Anaim, does that mean you don't have to separate it out at all? Or do you have to separate it out? So this is the machloket here of Elazar Omer. Ein tzarich lekoto et hashem al maaser ani shel demai. You don't even have to separate it out. You don't even have to call a name to it. Chamim amrim kore et hashem ve'enu tzarich lafrish. You just designate, this is the tent that belongs to the ani, and you don't have to actually separate it out. You just have to articulate that there is maaser ani here. And in articulating the maaser ani, you now have discharged your obligation. And now it's a monetary obligation which has a motzim charel of araya. My love behalf kamiflege. What is their machloket about? The mar saber vaday tovlo, umar saber vaday eno tovlo. Their machloket is whether this causes the tevel to be problematic or not. According to Rabbi Elazar, tevel, that is tevel to maaser ani, is not problematic. So whether you take it off or not is irrelevant, and so if it's maaser shel demai, we're not going to make you take it off. Chamima then believe that if you have maaser ani in the tevel, you get makot for it. So you need to be mafrishit. Even though you have to give it, you still have to be mafrishit. And that would be a machloket about what Ram is saying. We'd have a machloket tanaim here as to whether maaser ani can make something into tevel to the point where you'll get makot for it. Amalei Abaye says back to his Rebbe, Rav Yosef, Yochi, if you're right about that, why are they arguing about a case of masrot, b'safek, whether you have to take off the maaser ani or not? Argue about it b'vadai. Even if it's something that you know for sure you have to take off maaser ani from it. If a person didn't separate out the maaser ani, what's the din? According to Rabbi Elazar, there's no isur. According to the Chachamim, there will be an isur. That'd be a much better way to explain it than rather say it's a case of demai. Ela dekuliyama vade toblo. Everybody holds like Rav, and that is that if you have maaser ani embedded in this item, it's still tevel, and you'll get malkot for it. This is what they're arguing about. What is the mindset of the Amei Aretz? Marsav alo nechshadu Amei Aretz al maaser ani shel demai came into mamonu aprushe mafrish, because the Amei Aretz weren't worried about taking off maaser ani. All you have to do is separate it out, and then it's a monetary obligation, and they don't mind stealing. They'll keep it for themselves. So they'll separate it out, keep it for themselves, and they will do it because it's really no skin off their back to say that this corner is maaser ani, and then just eat it and not give it to the aniim. Banatsare came into tricha le'milta lo mafrish. Since it is a little bit of an effort or a pain in the neck, they don't do it. And the other version of it, you can see in the Groy, is same as this sanya le'milta. They don't like it, or they don't believe in it, therefore they're not mafrish it. So it's a machloket about what is the mindset of the Amei Aretz. Again, we said that Yochanan Kohen Gadol checked around all of Eretz Yisrael and he found that they were all taking off Truma. Because they knew Truma had a mita bidei shamayim, so they took that off. Everything else, they figured, nah, we're not taking that off because then we have to give it away. But Yochanan Kohen Gadol came and explained to him, is, look, Truma Gadola is a problem mita bidei shamayim. So is Trumat Maser. And if you're not taking off Maser Rishon, then you have a problem with Trumat Maser in this tevel. So that's why he instituted that by demai, you take off Maaser Rishon, take off the Trumat Maser, give that to the Kohen, and then the Maaser Rishon you can keep because the Motzei Mechareh Olav Araya. Same with Maaser Sheni, you'll separate it out, redeem it, and you can keep the monies and eat it yourself up in your Yerushalayim, so there's no loss to you. And Maaser Ani, you'll separate out and not give it to the Ani because it's Motzei Mechareh Olav Araya, but you separate it out to remove the issue of Tevel. And that's the machloket here is, do you need to do that because do the Amei Aretz do it because there's no skin off their back? Or because either they don't like it or it's too much of an effort for them, they just don't bother to do it. And that's their machloket. And therefore, there's nobody who disagrees with Rav's position over here. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph.